Hello and welcome to AI Haven't a Clue. And this is the stories that form the AI wars. I am George Butler, AI novice.
And I'm James Chandler, AI expert.
And time for something a little bit different today, because for the first time ever, we are taking a look at one of the stories that has shaped the AI journey so far in our new series, The Stories That Formed the AI Wars. And it's going to be a two-parter. Normal service will resume in a couple of weeks, but this is going to be fascinating because we're taking a look at the story of Elon Musk versus Sam Altman. James, it's going to get juicy, this.
This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. I don't know if there's a rift quite like this one. These two are taking shots at each other almost on a daily basis. But we're going to delve right into where it all started, go right back to the beginning, maybe one or two predictions about where it goes next.
These two figures are central. Sam Altman, the man at the helm of OpenAI, which runs ChatGPT, Elon Musk, obviously, probably doesn't need an introduction, but in the AI space, XAI, Grok, that's his. So these two, well, they've been friends, they've been enemies, and we're going to be finding out all about that journey. Along the way, there's shock firings, there's mass fallouts, there's lawsuits, and so much more. And it's going to be quite the journey. To help us tell this story, we have got a friend of the show, the brilliant journalist from The Media Leader, Jack Benjamin, joining us. Should we dive into this, James?
Let's do it.
Jack, hello. Thank you very much for joining us on AI Haven't a Clue for the stories that form the AI wars, Elon versus Sam.
Oh, thanks so much for having me back. Very warm welcome.
Difficult second album.
Well, it's a big story we're about to tell. This is huge. So I want to kind of jump right into this. And I want to take us back to 2015. I want to take us back to Jeremy Clarkson had just been fired from Top Gear. Remember Top Gear? David Cameron, he'd won his UK general election. Netflix and Chill had entered the pop culture frame. And Uptown Funk by Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars. I've never heard of it.
I think it's still number one.
That was in the charts. We're in 2015. James, what were you up to in 2015?
Much going on in 2015 based on my camera roll. I went to San Francisco for the first time, went to Mountain View. I saw my first driverless car.
Wow.
I had my first In-N-Out burger and I used my first wireless charging mat thing that was in a restaurant. So I had a great start to the year.
Wow. Mm. Well, 2015, as well as James seeing his first driverless car, was also the year that OpenAI began its journey. And Jack, we're going to kind of dive into the story that made it. We're going to look at Sam Altman today as well, one of the most prominent figures in tech, arguably in the world. Before we get in there, why is this story important? Why does it matter? What's the reason for telling this tale?
Well, I think, first of all, OpenAI is sort of one of the big AI companies. It really kicked off when ChatGPT came out. That was a huge deal. It kicked off the AI boom as we know it.
ChatGPT. Maybe you've heard of it. If you haven't, then get ready.
For the popular software program, ChatGPT.
The initials GPT stand for Generative Pre-trained Transformer.
It's a computer program that will write whatever you want.
Embryonic version of online artificial intelligence. You do not need to be a techie to use this.
I don't think anyone heard of Sam Altman until ChatGPT came out.
Yeah.
But he was toiling away for a long time beforehand. I think it's important people understand what they were working on, where the money came from, and sort of what that means for the company today. Mm. And OpenAI is a particularly interesting one as well because it was founded as a nonprofit, now then had a for-profit arm, now just moved to become a proper for-profit company. So I think people should understand maybe the implications of that company history.
Mm. All of that to come. James, would you say right now OpenAI is the most influential company in the world? Is that overstating things?
I think probably on a couple of metrics. I think if you just look at numbers of growth of ChatGPT, I think is probably up there. Ads have kind of gone in, so they're the first to do that. They've been poaching some pretty big talent. I don't think you can separate AI as we know it today and OpenAI, ChatGPT. You know, my kids talk about asking chat. Mm. You know, they don't say, you know, I'm going to put something into a LLM or we're going to ask AI. It's going to ask, we're going to ask chat. So yeah, I think the two are kind of fused together.
I mean, neither Sam Altman or Elon Musk are shy and retiring types. They're both very prominent and kind of center stage in the tech space and in the AI wars. And that's why I think it's quite important, I guess, to take a step back away from 2015 and find out a little bit more about Sam Altman. Jack, where was he born? What was his upbringing in life? Did he face any early challenges?
From Geico Subconscious News, I'm Tammy Racing Thoughts. Tonight, you just left for work and had a non-specific feeling that something was happening to your place and it wasn't good. Dan?
Exactly, Tammy. It could be smoke damage, theft, or just too much caffeine, but you can't stop thinking about it.
But with renter's insurance through Geico, your stuff is covered, so you don't have to worry.
And that's great, because the weekend is coming up and it's chock full of social obligations that are ready to fill that void.
Oh boy, will they, Dan? It feels good to worry less. It feels good to Geico.
Well, we actually share a common background. We're both born in Chicago, and we're both Jewish as well. But Altman's family moved, and he was raised in the St. Louis suburbs, went to a private school there, and ultimately, I mean, he must have done pretty well. I'm sure he's a pretty smart guy. Mm. Went to Stanford for undergrad and dropped out after 2 years. Sort of this classic, I feel like, Silicon Valley type of story where bright kid, wants to get into the startup game, founds a company that ends up getting purchased for, I think it was over $40 million.
And what was his company?
It's called Looped. The idea was sort of before Apple introduced Find My Friends, it was a sort of social networking service that allowed smartphone users to selectively share locations with people. He started that in 2005. And then by the time it's bought in, I believe it was 2012, he had sort of amassed a good chunk of change from that sale. It's worth sort of noting as well where that funding came from for his original project, which was from a combination of Y Combinator, Sequoia Capital, and New Enterprise Associates. And those are some venture capital firms that you'll hear about a lot within Silicon Valley spaces. Y Combinator is a sort of startup accelerator, and Altman ultimately went on to join Y Combinator in 2011, became its president in 2014. So in and around when he was selling Looped is when he then also decided, actually, I'm going to get into the sort of VC game.
So in that space between selling his first kind of big business and the inception of OpenAI, he was at a venture capitalist. He was running a venture capitalist firm.
He wasn't yet running Y Combinator until 2014. But even after selling Looped, he ended up starting his own venture capital firm with the money that he got from the sale. But then also, this is sort of where Peter Thiel comes into the picture. And that's a big name that I'm sure many listeners have heard of, but might not know as much about the background of. But Thiel ends up sort of bankrolling this venture capital firm and ends up becoming a very lucrative relationship with Thiel. I don't know if we could do a whole episode about Peter Thiel.
That's the sequel. just on in a line, Jack, who is Peter Thiel?
In a line?
Yeah. in a few sentences, Jack, who is Peter Thiel?
Peter Thiel was originally the CEO of PayPal. He's been highly, highly influential in Silicon Valley. I think the Financial Times called him the philosopher king of Silicon Valley. This is perhaps more information than is necessary, but he's, you know, quite strange in terms of his philosophy, political philosophy. He's very sort of anti-democratic. Mm. There was an article in The Atlantic in 2023 where I think it was the author wrote something about how he's basically sick of democracy, doesn't want to hear it about it anymore. He has these weird views in the news recently about the Antichrist coming, thinking that the Antichrist is sort of someone who is Greta Thunberg, a person who's warning about climate change and AI, you know, apocalypse, that this is like the worst person in society. But if you go all the way back to when he was just the PayPal guy, you know, he was a guy from South Africa, entrepreneur, dot-com boom, made a tremendous amount of money, and then used that money subsequently to invest in some of the biggest Silicon Valley startups, like Facebook is kind of the first big one.
Yeah. And of course, Sam Altman, close with Peter, who was at PayPal, formed with?
Mr. Musk, of course.
It's all connected. But look, let's start in 2015, the year that OpenAI began its journey. James, at the time, 2015, was there a view on AI? Was it a thing even in the tech lands of San Francisco?
Yeah, totally. But not what we know AI today. You probably would have heard lots of talk about deep learning or machine learning rather than sort of chatbots. Image recognition was getting pretty good. Speech recognition was getting better fast. Google had just bought DeepMind, which was a UK startup. But no one was talking, even in kind of Silicon Valley, no one was talking about, you know, computers writing code or generating images, any of that sort of stuff.
So where we're at now with the fact that, yeah, you can ask ChatGPT to create us an image and it does it like, you know, where we are now is not a place that in 2016 they necessarily foresaw.
It's kind of like old AI is a bad way of putting it, but it's before we got to generative. It's before we put it into everyone's hands and they could play with it. The ad industry, for example, were using a whole load of machine learning around targeting, around performance, very, very sophisticated things like being able to detect fraud. The analytics were getting better, this whole idea of predictive analytics. So the pipe and behind the scenes, AI, or we would have called it then probably machine learning, was playing a huge role. You'd have heard things like neural networks then, which no one kind of talks about now. So it was all kind of still techie, still very much kind of West Coast. It wasn't really in people's psyche. No one was sort of putting hands on a keyboard or tapping things into a phone and getting anything from AI then.
So Sam Altman, in the year 2015, running a tech venture capitalist business, how did he go from there to launching OpenAI?
Well, it actually sort of began with a conversation with Elon Musk, something that Peter Thiel set up relationships with a lot of Silicon Valley, you know, heads. And Musk, before we met Altman, had a conversation with Demis Hassabis, who's the CEO of DeepMind, which was ultimately acquired by Google. I think it was around 2014 when it was acquired. And that kind of got Musk on AI. They had a conversation at SpaceX. Musk has owned SpaceX for a long time. Peter Thiel's an investor in SpaceX. So Musk is interested. Altman also knows Thiel. Altman takes another tour of SpaceX. Everyone's taking tours of SpaceX, apparently. And the two sort of have this bond. Musk had been put on this concern from Hassabis that, like, AI could be a serious threat to his project of getting people to Mars. And Musk, is, as we'll talk about, is kind of a... eccentric is a really kind way of putting it. And Altman also is sort of put on this concern around, oh, you know what, AI actually... could be the next big thing. And keep in mind, Peter Thiel was sort of doesn't love the way Silicon Valley is innovating around the mid to early 2010s, feeling like we're spending all this money, we're just creating like apps to replace services that already exist. And so he and Altman, who he has quite a bit of influence over, sort of they're looking at the state of technology like, we need to take bigger risks. You know, we need to think about AI. We need to think about nuclear. We need to think big picture. What's the next big life-changing technology? And so this sort of confluence of interests combines, and Altman and Musk meet, and they start to chat over email and saying, you know what, we think AI is going to be the next thing that we need to get around. And we need to do it in a way that is safe, is at least the initial discussion.
This is the kind of the spark which lights OpenAI. But how did the formation of this business happen? And when they kind of kicked things off, when the inception of OpenAI happened, what was its founding mission?
So the original founders are Sam Altman and Elon Musk. There's a number of other founders, but those two are the co-chairs. And its funding included about $1 billion in pledges. I think they actually only collected about $130 million, which is still a lot, included from people like Thiel, from the founding partner of Y Combinator, all these connections they made, LinkedIn founder Reid Hoffman. But the mission is, quote, to ensure that artificial general intelligence, or AGI, by which we mean highly autonomous systems that outperform humans at most economically valuable work, benefits all humanity, end quote. And I should say that is still their mission today.
Wow.
It's still on the website.
It was founded, James, as a non-for-profit, right?
Yeah. I mean, Jack mentioned earlier, but the for-profit arm came came slightly later, so the two coexisted. We'll maybe get into the bit where Sam kind of leaves and comes back, and then, you know, now to go fully profit. But with a mission like that, you can kind of see it wouldn't really work as a commercial business. You'd have a real rub between, you know, trying to do something effectively with humanity that's very, very lofty and this thing that they need to do, versus trying to make money from it. The two just wouldn't have kind of sat together.
So they've generated a huge ton of money. What initially was that to be invested in?
Well, I think it's partially invested in people. They were able to attract a huge amount of talent. I think they hired 52 employees just in 2016 alone. And they hired them for actually a lot cheaper than those people might have been hired by Google or Facebook. And partially it was because of this nonprofit status. There was a belief in like, well, I'm sure they're collecting multi-million dollar paychecks regardless. But there was also a belief of like, I can do that while maybe doing some good as opposed to doing it for a commercial interest.
And you mentioned Elon and Sam, they were co-chairs of this business, the kind of the two key founders. How close were they at the start of this journey?
It's hard to sense. I mean, there was no rift at that point. They were pretty much aligned, I think, in terms of how they, you know, their view on the world, why they felt like they needed this company. I would think in the background, Elon was probably thinking about things like SpaceX and Tesla and maybe some of his own. There would have been a certain direction, I think, he would have wanted to go in with those companies and, you know, perhaps would have imprinted that on OpenAI. But I guess as close as, you know, two people like that could be. I mean,
Did Sam need Elon more at that time than Elon needed Sam?
I mean, probably. Musk was and still is highly influential, certainly came with a lot of money. Musk himself said he was willing to put up a lot of money. I'm not actually sure how much of it was ultimately collected or spent by OpenAI. But even if it's just opening doors, I mean, Altman, of course, at Y Combinator certainly knew quite a lot of people, but I'm not exactly sure. It doesn't seem like they were ever especially the closest of friends, put it that way. They were business partners. They were aligned at the time on their vision for the company. And then obviously as time progressed, that stopped.
I think there's an important thing to say on almost style here as well. Like Musk is a founder who exerts control. He's decisive. He wants to innovate. He's often, you know, seek forgiveness after rather than sort of seek permission to do stuff. My sense around Sam Altman is that he is sort of slightly different. I think he believes in the mission. You know, he believes in, I think, was probably at the time, you know, thinking about governance, that kind of stuff. So you've got this odd mix of personalities. I think Elon would probably have seen himself as that person who, like, he runs all his other companies. He sleeps on the floor in Tesla and he's there with the workers and, you know, he's kind of getting his hands dirty and, you know, he is kind of this god-type figure at the top of these companies. It was a slightly different dynamic at play here.
We touched a few times upon this mission and safe AI is something that you've kind of mentioned was a key part of the reason OpenAI was set up. Did they agree? Did those two agree on what safe AI meant? And also, did they kind of both have a common enemy in what unsafe AI would be?
I think they did have an alignment on what was at the time maybe considered safe or safeguarded. The model was to be open source, to allow a level of transparency in how they were developing their different AI models. That is necessarily safer than sort of having an entirely black box, totally opaque system.
And when we say open source, James, we mean what anyone can get in there and...
Yeah, you can go in and build. It's not a kind of a closed shop or a walled garden that, you know, only certain few can.
So anyone can get in. That's kind of a key theme for them.
That's definitely part of it, yeah. And I think from a safety perspective, there was also maybe... there's a vibe to a nonprofit that's totally different from a for-profit, right? The commercial interests necessarily come into conflict with ethics. I mean, how many companies today can we point to and say that that's part of the issue? Google most famously said, do no evil, and then they removed that from their masthead a couple of years back. And I'm not saying they have done evil, but certainly critics would agree that they have. So there's a conflict. You get to a certain point where you really need to make money. And so the idea at the time was, if we can say there is never going to be a commercial conflict with this business, eventually that comes. But at the time, you know, maybe that's a safer way of developing AI. We can be open, we can be transparent, and we can also, you know, not have to worry about just making money.
So when kind of safety is talked about in the same sentence as AI, I often hear AGI. AGI is a concern. I mean, firstly, what is AGI?
Well, AGI, to my knowledge, doesn't exist yet. AGI stands for Artificial General Intelligence. The idea is that this AI can outperform any human at virtually any task. And then that's a step below superintelligence, which is a word you hear a lot from the likes of Mark Zuckerberg, right? But the idea is that if we're going to develop a tool that can be better than humans at everything, we should probably understand it, first of all, and keep, you know, clamps on it to some degree. Otherwise, you get into the sort of Isaac Asimov, iRobot situation. What rules are we giving it? Could this AI get access to nuclear codes and start a nuclear war because it's in the AI's best interest to destroy all humans, that type of apocalyptic concern? And frankly, that's a lot of the concern that was animating Musk and Altman's conversations back in 2014, 2015 when they were first founding it.
A useful way to think about it, think about kind of current AI. Current AI is very good at, you give it tasks, translate this language, create this image, generate me some text. What it can't do, and the promise of AGI, is that it would be able to have a lot more autonomy to do those things. And it would be able to learn how to do one thing over here and then apply that to something else. At the moment, it can't do that. It's really good at recognizing patterns, but it can't think independently. It can't apply some learning from over here and take it over here. You start to look at things like Moltbook, you start to look at things like agents talking to each other, and you can see it's kind of on the cusp there, but I don't know, maybe 5-10 years might never happen. We might get into a place where legal or regulation or privacy, people just don't have an appetite for this sort of thing, and what we'll get is really, really good narrow AI, but we won't get this kind of AGI, which maybe lots of Silicon Valley is kind of promising.
When we had Karen Howe on the show a few weeks ago, and she mentioned it's something which is almost like a religion at AI, this pursuit of AGI. So clearly, in Karen's view, it's something which Sam Altman's kind of culture is driving. Do we know what Elon's view is? Is this something Elon's looking for as well? Or do they have a difference in view on that, on AGI?
Yeah, to some degree, Musk is after this as well. I mean, certainly, and we'll get to this later, I imagine, but he does found his own AI company eventually. So they're all sort of chasing this potentially fictional technology, which I worry we don't talk about this enough. Like, what they're necessarily trying to do might not even be possible with current technology, or certainly the way that the LLMs are designed. My understanding of LLM design, and I'm not an AI expert in this way, but is that they're sort of predicting what word is meant to come after the next word and when they're giving you text, right? And to me, that's a very different type of tool than something that can think on its own and connect all these tasks and everything. So as James said, we may be a long ways away, but certainly Musk, Altman, all these people are sort of interested in developing it.
So we're in 2015. OpenAI, it's just launched. Elon and Sam, they're the co-chairs, they're running the show. What was the OpenAI product in those initial years and the years that followed? What went live? What impact did that have?
Well, what's really funny is that they didn't even know what they were building to start with. So there's a great Vanity Fair article by Emily Jane Fox in 2015. Musk and Altman go on stage. They do some interviews, some press. When they're doing this press circuit, Fox writes, quote,
"While it's not entirely clear what OpenAI will do, the investors said they plan to pump as much as $1 billion into AI research over time, with all of the results, including research code and patents, made public and royalty-free."
Obviously, that's since changed over time. And then they sort of get into the why we're doing it for as a non-for-profit. And so at the front, and we don't even know what they're building. They don't even know what they're building. And it's not until 2018, a couple years later, that they end up releasing GPT-1.
So is that ChatGPT, or is it a different product?
It's the first of its large language models, but it's before ChatGPT. So ChatGPT ends up coming in around, I think it's GPT 3.5 is when ChatGPT comes in. So it requires a level of development to get to the point where they can release a consumer product, but it is a large language model that they're working on. And GPT, by the way, I didn't know this until I did some research for this podcast. It stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer.
Oh.
So that's, great trivia pub quiz.
Good pub quiz. Good pub quiz.
Oh, I got the wrong tattoo.
You thought it was Teletubby, not Transformer.
And the Transformer is an artificial neural network. That's a little bit beyond my scope as a reporter. Not exactly. But that was sort of developed off of what DeepMind was doing at the time.
So what was this GPT product offering? What was it doing?
I'm not really sure. Like, honestly, I don't at the time, because it wasn't a consumer product. So they were sort of just developing these models in-house for research purposes to sort of see, what have we got here? Does this transformer model that was originally introduced by DeepMind, does this work and can we build on this and can we iterate? Mm. So, and thankfully, as a nonprofit, they didn't have to worry about commercial, like, we need to go to market right now. We can sort of test and learn and develop it.
Yeah. So what was the first kind of consumer focused product that, you know, you or I could have accessed?
The first product that we could have accessed was ChatGPT, which was sort of based off of GPT 3.5. But before that, OpenAI had licensed GPT-3 to Microsoft. And then that's part of investment deal that comes in around 2019, which is the sort of, that's the year where suddenly OpenAI is starting to think maybe this not-for-profit model is not working for us. Yeah, GPT-1 and GPT-2 are open source. Anyone can access it. Anyone can develop off the back of that.
Yeah.
GPT-3 comes in, and that's the first time OpenAI is actually saying, okay, we're going to restrict access and we're going to license it out to other companies. And that's around 2019, and that's when OpenAI starts to say, maybe we need to go with some sort of a for-profit arm or something, because this is really expensive and we actually need a lot of money to fund this, and maybe we can, instead of just giving it away as in an open source model, we can get big companies to come in and license it.
Mm. So there's a few points to break down it. Can we start with ChatGPT launches? It's based off this 3.5, struggling, James, to keep up with all the numbers here. And that's a kind of a similar-ish product, James, right, to what we have now. I guess not quite as advanced, but it could similar things.
It's a version of that you could have used. Obviously, the reasoning isn't as good. All of the stuff that we take for granted now is just not quite as good, like any legacy model.
But we need to kind of go back a few years in this story to really understand it. So we now know 2015 is when it started. Kind of 2022 was where there's this full, proper public product. And in the years in between, plenty happened. Now, Microsoft came on board. Jack, when was that and what happened there?
So Microsoft first makes its investment in July of 2019.
The early frontrunner that reportedly has just secured a $10 billion shot in the arm from Microsoft.
Getting billions of dollars from Microsoft to help develop it.
It comes after Altman's by now left his job at Y Combinator. He's committed to OpenAI full time. They've started to release GPT-2 earlier in the year. The model's starting to advance a little bit. And most importantly, 2019 is the year that OpenAI first restructures. So the aim of the restructure was to, quote, ensure the company could raise capital in pursuit of its mission while preserving the nonprofit's mission, governance, and oversight. So functionally, what happened is you still have the nonprofit OpenAI. That nonprofit created a for-profit subsidiary, OpenAI Global LLC, which was supported by Microsoft's billion-dollar investment.
Was that kind of a fundamental shift in both the business, but also kind of the future of artificial intelligence?
Yeah, and I mean, Jack's right. Breaking out of that not-for-profit model was really, really important. You know, the key thing with not-for-profit is whatever money you make is the same money that you spend. You basically just have to break even. If you're taking $1 billion, you know, it's pretty hard. You know, have to go and ramp up pretty quickly to try and spend that money. So they were kind of right to spin it off. But yeah, looking back now in hindsight, you would say that was a pretty big step for the company.
It was a step that not everybody supported, because we're going to rewind back.
$1 billion shot in the arm.
They didn't even know what they were building.
ChatGPT is a computer program that will write whatever you want.
Machine learning rather than chatbots.
James, you told us about your first trip to San Francisco in 2015. 2018, Dua Lipa was top of the charts with One Kiss. England had their most successful World Cup tournament since Italia 90, getting to the semi-finals. What were you up to in 2018, James?
Weeping about England losing a semi-final.
Oh, yes, same.
I was doing lots and lots of travel, I think. I was in a big global role, which was quite exciting. So I was doing lots of traveling around the world. I think I went to Oslo and I tried reindeer brain and pickled herring. Neither were great from memory.
Had the words artificial intelligence crossed your path yet and entered into your world?
No, not even in my psyche at that point.
Well, it was very much in the psyche of Elon Musk, who started this business with Sam Altman with a shared vision of a safer AI as a non-for-profit. Mr. Musk, however, well, he didn't necessarily agree with the new direction of OpenAI. He left, Jack.
Yes, so Musk resigns from its board of directors this year. The reason cited for the departure at the time was that he left over a potential future conflict of interest. Tesla was thinking about doing some automated driving. He felt like maybe that was an issue.
What was the real reason, though?
Well, first of all, I should note, Tesla still has not achieved that goal, and it's been 8 years. So they've been leapfrogged by Waymo, which is owned by Google. Anyway, sorry. Just needed to get that jab in against Elon Musk. The real reason OpenAI later divulged, according to them, was that Musk had actually attempted to merge OpenAI with Tesla. Mm. That was rejected. Musk wanted, it seems like, full control. There was actually a bit of a power struggle that happened. And it's also worth noting, given the lawsuit that comes later, that OpenAI at least says that Musk was open to transitioning OpenAI into a for-profit enterprise at this time as well.
And but that's something Elon disputes, right?
Well, yeah, but that would, because that would really harm his legal case currently. But so, I mean, do you trust what OpenAI has to say? They've got some receipts, and we can get into that later.
At the time, what were the tensions like between Elon and Sam?
These are big ego guys. Has Musk ever ceded control willingly in any company?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Is Sam Altman also potentially seeing, wow, we have a lot of potential investor interest. This could make a huge amount of money for us someday. I mean, they're starting to think about turning it into a for-profit enterprise at this point. So classic clash of massive egos. And also, like, these are like God Emperor. Mm. Like, they think that they are the most important people in the world.
Yeah.
And to some degree, I suppose that they force that reality upon the rest of us.
James, was there any philosophical differences here, or is it purely about power and control?
I think it probably was. I think those things at the start were probably masked a little bit. I kind of go back to the style. Elon's pretty combustible, you know, in his relationships. You know, he'll fire people on the spot. I mean, you read about what he did when he went into Twitter. He just kind of gets rid of people. Like, nothing gets in his way. He's just kind of this bulldozer that gets kind of what he wants. And that was seeming to be pretty hard here. I think he voiced a lot of frustration around the progress. There's that fantastic newsletter, which is when you end up in legal cases, you have to submit a bunch of emails and WhatsApps that you send. There's all these email exchanges between them too, where he's kind of insisting, look, we need to change course, we need to double down, you know, we need loads of cash. So, and you know, Sam Altman, as Jack rightly says, is kind of thinking about, you know, doing it the proper way and, you know, changing the structure of the business, you know, and then we end up at this thing where, you know, okay, yeah, Tesla are thinking about this, I've got a conflict of interest, I'm out.
Elon's out. Jack, how does the structure of OpenAI change with the departure of Elon Musk?
With Musk out, the structure doesn't immediately change, but that does set into motion, especially given Musk eventually starts being rather critical of OpenAI's transition into a for-profit arm. That does sort of set up issues for a couple years down the line, where there's other members of OpenAI that might share that criticism, and then there ends up being a power struggle later as well. But for the time being, basically, Musk is out. Altman sort of is the king of the castle, and they're continuing with their AI development.
Do they continue on their original mission, or does that drift with Musk's departure?
Well, I think it drifts, but I think it was going to drift whether or not Musk left, if that makes sense. Mm. And you especially see this, Musk himself has set up his own AI company that is for profit, that he has sold to his other businesses. So I think regardless of whether Musk or Altman were steering this ship, I think you probably end up with the not-for-profit getting dropped or at least sort of sidelined. But it's impossible to know for sure what the company would look like had, say, Musk actually succeeded in sort of merging OpenAI with Tesla a little bit more, or at least is with his own personal business interests.
So what was Elon, what was he complaining about? What was he publicly moaning about? What was he saying at that time?
Well, in 2020, Musk starts essentially shitposting about AI on Twitter. This is a few years before he bought it. Business Insider reported at the time that Musk said the company should be more open, that his confidence that it would prioritize safety is not high. Interestingly, at the time, that criticism was actually not directed at Altman. It was directed at Dario Amodei, who later that year actually left to found Anthropic, which is the chatbot.
Small world.
Which owns Claude, essentially, yeah. Mm. So at the time, I guess he wasn't like going rah-rah against Altman, even though there may have, it's possible that they were not on the best of terms at the time already, privately. I don't know. But once he stepped out, he started lodging these complaints about, well, I don't think they're actually taking safety that seriously. We could end up with an AI apocalypse if OpenAI is not careful.
So Elon's left. Did this damage his reputation, James?
Well, you've got to think this is a time where this is kind of pre him going into Twitter. I mean, the guy was seen as a real visionary. You know, he was working ridiculous hour days with Tesla. He was a guy who's putting a lot of his own money into putting rockets into the sky with SpaceX. I mean, he was kind of the best bit of Elon before Twitter, before Trump, before all the stuff he's having today. Still a complete renegade. But, you know, I think seen as a real kind of visionary, yeah, not the reputation that he has today. It's important to remember that.
His leaving the business, arguably, in that world at that time, probably had a bit of a detrimental impact on the way maybe the sector viewed OpenAI. It had Sam Altman at the front. But is he viewed as a businessman or as a technologist?
Probably more of a technologist. But, I mean, to be fair, like, he had a hugely successful venture capital firm. Mm. Going back to his relationship with Peter Thiel, Altman's time at Y Combinator, he recommended massive investments to Thiel that ended up paying out tremendous. So it's not like he didn't have any business savvy. He could sort of identify what the business models of coming out of Silicon Valley were most likely to be great. So I don't think it has, without Musk there, that Altman is suddenly lacking confidence from the market. I think OpenAI ended up at the time into a little bit of a difficulty in raising funding, primarily due to A, its nonprofit structure, and B, also Microsoft had a lot of control over its investment in OpenAI at the time. So when 2022 comes around, before ChatGPT is released to the public, Microsoft's the dominant investor. OpenAI was valued at $29 billion, but was only doing about $50 million in revenue with its relationship with Microsoft. Does that seem like a company that you really want to throw a lot of money at? Maybe, maybe not. The only investor at the time that submitted a term sheet during that funding round was Thrive Capital, which, just because it's a small world, was founded by Josh Kushner, who's the younger brother of Jared Kushner, which is Donald Trump's son-in-law. And when you start to sort of put the pieces together around who was investing in these companies, you end up with sort of the smorgasbord of far-right political influence and business influence out of the U.S. But that's, I suppose, an entirely other story and podcast, probably.
That's the sequel. Yeah. If Elon had stayed with OpenAI, would things have been different? Would ChatGPT exist as it does today? Would the course have been pushed into another direction?
This is my personal opinion. It's impossible to know, but I think it would, if anything, would have accelerated the move to for-profit status, just knowing Musk's views on business. He's said a lot of things in public to the exact opposite effect. Basically, what I'm saying is that either he's lying or being disingenuous is kind of what I'm saying. But I think the way that he would have run the business, certainly if you believe that the emails that OpenAI says it has between Musk and its founders in 2017, is that Musk was open to making money. Musk, as we know, founded XAI. That's for profit. It's making money.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I think you probably end in a similar place.
James, do you think Elon's kind of journey, and I don't know about a fall from grace, I don't know if he was ever quite in grace, but he's certainly, his reputation has certainly been sliding over recent years. Do you think that would have been different if he'd have been at the helm with Sam Altman at this game-changing business?
Maybe. I mean, the first thing you've got to say is, could that business have continued and been sustainable with both of them at the helm? Maybe not. Maybe there was a world where Sam Altman stepped out and Elon took it over, made it part of, you know, Tesla. You know, XAI never happened. He never bought. There's a real kind of sliding doors moment there if he stays. You know, whether the two of them could have kind of come to some consensus Yeah, I'm not sure. But yeah, these are kind of if, buts, and maybes in history. You know, imagine if he didn't buy Twitter. You know, imagine if, you know, he sided with the Democrats as he initially did rather than go over full Republican. You know,
Altman's the same.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, the interesting thing I think that Jack is saying, you know, if you have one of those, like, you know, like in the detective films where you have the pins on the big board and you put, you know, this is a very tight group of, you know, almost exclusively white males, incredibly privileged with lots of money making big investments in these companies. So there's all, you know, people talk about the kind of the AI bubble from a kind of interconnected point of view. It's exactly the same with the funding. I'm sure the map would be really, really similar. So everyone's kind of winning in this. So the move to go from profit to have a for-profit arm, you know, there were always going to be winners within that.
Was the fallout of Elon Musk from OpenAI, the rift with Sam Altman and from rivals at Anthropic and the rest of the industry, was this the pinpoint to the start of the AI wars?
Sort of. It's not just a fracture of all these people from DeepMind or OpenAI moving out and doing their own companies. It's also, you have to keep in mind the timing in the investment environment. We're talking about getting into the pandemic. Interest rates are already low. They get even lower. Mm. Money is about as cheap as it's probably ever going to be. So you have lots of venture capital funds looking for the next big thing. People start talking about AI. Everyone's going online. They're spending loads of time online. Suddenly, these companies start to look a lot more attractive. And so you do start to see a little bit of an arms race around this time. Mm. Keep in mind, there's also the crypto boom. Like, there's so much going on and there's so much froth in this market that, yeah, you could sort of point to this time around 2020 as the start of, or at least the acceleration of, a serious arms race in AI. But we don't, as consumers, see the fruits of that for another couple of years.
Yeah.
So we're in 2022, 2023 time, and ChatGPT is officially launched. I think it's fair to say things are looking quite rosy and very exciting at OpenAI.
I would certainly think so. I mean, it was the most downloaded app, the fastest downloaded app of all time. Mm. There was a serious demand to try out this new tool, and I don't know if it was a marketing push or what caused it. But it was the best chatbot that's ever been put out in market at the time.
They were flying. The business was flying. OpenAI seeing huge success. Sam Altman at the helm. James, looking on at that time, you could be forgiven for thinking nothing was going to stop Sam Altman's rise, right?
Yeah, I mean, his star was probably shining the brightest it's ever going to shine.
Then in 2023, Sam Altman gets fired from OpenAI. Next time on AI Haven't a Clue.